Penguin Random House Audio presents My Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. Read for you by Emma Galvin. Many persons inspired by Ishmael have inspired me. This book is dedicated to three of them: Rachel Rosenthal, Ray C. Anderson, and Alan Thornhill, with special thanks to Howie Ritchie, the architect of Mokonzi Nkemi's revolution, and to author James Burke, whose books and columns brought to my attention some of the connections noted in the chapter entitled Revolutionaries. Readers familiar with the work of Richard Dawkins, especially in The Selfish Gene, will easily recognize the debt owed to him in these pages, a debt I most humbly and gratefully acknowledge here. Hello there. I think it's pretty lousy to wake up at age 16 and realize you've already been screwed. Not that there's anything terrifically unusual about getting screwed at this age. It seems like everyone inside 50 miles is bent on doing you in. But not many 16-year-olds get screwed in this particular way. Not many have the opportunity to get screwed this way. I'm grateful. I really am. But this story is not about me at age 16. This is about something that happened when I was 12. That was a painful time in my life. My mother was deciding she might as well go ahead and be a drunk. In the previous 3 or 4 years, she wanted me to think she was just a social drinker. But she figured I must know the truth by now, so why go on pretending? She didn't ask my opinion about it. If she had, I would have said, "Please go on pretending, Mom, especially in front of me, okay?" But this isn't a story about my mother. It's just that you have to understand some of this if you want to understand the rest. My parents were divorced when I was 5, but I won't bore you with that story. I don't even know that story, really, because Mom tells it one way and Dad tells it another. Sound familiar? Anyway, Dad remarried when I was 8. Mom almost did the same, but the guy turned out to be a creep, so she skipped it. Along about in there, she started putting on weight big time. Luckily, she already had a good job. She heads up the word processing operation at a big law firm downtown. And then she took to stopping for a drink after work. This got to be a pretty long stop. All the same, she rolled out of bed every morning at 7:30 no matter what. And I think she made it a rule not to start drinking before the end of the business day. Except on weekends, of course. But I won't go into that either. I was not a happy girl. In those days, I thought it might help if I played the dutiful daughter. When I got home from school, I tried to put the house back to the way Mom would have wanted it if she cared anymore. Mostly this meant cleaning up the kitchen. The rest of the house stayed pretty neat. But neither of us had time to tackle the kitchen before heading off to work and school. Anyway, one day, as I was gathering up the newspaper, something in the want ad section caught my eye. It read, "Teacher seeks pupil. Must have an earnest desire to save the world. Apply in person." This was followed by a room number and the name of a ratty old office building downtown. It struck me as weird that a teacher would be seeking a pupil. It just didn't make any sense. The teachers I know, seeking a pupil would be like a dog seeking a flea. Then I took another look at the second sentence. "Must have an earnest desire to save the world." I thought, wow, this guy doesn't want much. The crazy thing was that this teacher ought to be pitching his services like everyone else, and he wasn't. It was like a help wanted ad. It was like the teacher needed the pupil, not the other way around. A shiver started at the back of my neck, and the hair stood up all over my head. "Wow," I said. "I could do this. I could be this guy's pupil. I could be useful." Something like that. It sounds silly now, but this ad hooked into my dreams. I knew where the building was, and all I had to remember was the room number. But I tore the ad out anyway and put it in a drawer in my room. That way, if I fell down, hit my head, and became an amnesiac, I'd still find it sitting there someday. It must have been a Friday night, because the next morning I lay in bed thinking about it, having a daydream about it, actually. I'll get to the daydream later. Room 105. The good news was that Mom didn't try to keep me on a short leash. She didn't keep herself on a short leash, so maybe she figured she had no business keeping me on one. Anyway. After breakfast, I told her, "I'm going out." And she said, "Okay." Not, "Where are you going?" or "When'll you be back?" Just, "Okay." I took a bus downtown. We live in a pretty decent little city. I'm not going to say where, exactly. You can stop at a red light without getting carjacked. Drive-by shootings are rare. No snipers on the roofs. Like that. So I didn't give a second thought to going downtown on a Saturday morning by myself. I knew the building mentioned in the ad. It was the Fairfield. A loser uncle of mine once had an office there. He chose it because it was in a good location, but cheap. In other words, crummy. The lobby brought back memories. It looked just the way it smelled, like wet dogs and cigars. It took me a while to figure out where to go. There was just one bank of offices on the ground floor, and room 105 wasn't in it. I finally found it at the back, by the loading dock, facing the freight elevator. I said to myself, "This can't be right." But there it was, room 105. I said to myself, "What am I doing here anyway? This door's not going to be unlocked on a Saturday." But it was. I walked into this huge empty room. Then I took in a lungful of air and was almost knocked down. It wasn't wet dogs and cigars this time. It was zoo. I didn't mind that. I like zoos. But, as I said, the place was empty. There was one sagging bookcase over at the left and one overstuffed chair over at the right. They looked like leftovers from a garage sale or something. I said to myself, "The guy has moved out." I looked around again, at the high, dirty windows overlooking the alley, at the dusty industrial lights hanging from the ceiling, at the peeling walls the color of pus. Then I said to myself, "Okay, I'll move in." I think I meant it. Nobody could possibly want this place, could they? So why shouldn't I have it? I mean, it already had a chair, didn't it? I could do without the rest for a while. There was one feature I hadn't figured out. The chair was facing a big sheet of dark glass in the middle of the right-hand wall. It reminded me of the kind of window witnesses look through to identify suspects in a police lineup. There had to be a room behind it, because there was a door beside the window. I went over to have a look. I put my nose up against the glass and used my hands to block out the light, and I thought it was a movie. About 10 feet back from the glass, there was sitting this great, huge, fat gorilla, munching on a tree twig. He was staring right back at me, and I suddenly knew it was not a movie. "Yow!" I said, and jumped back. I was startled, but not exactly scared. It seemed like I should be scared. I mean, I knew I'd be screaming my head off if I was a character in a movie, but the gorilla was just sitting there. I don't know. Maybe I was just too dumb to be scared. All the same, I did look over my shoulder to make sure I had a clear shot at the door. Then I slanted my eyes in to see if the gorilla was staying put. He was. He wasn't even quivering, or I would have been out of there. All right. I had to put all this together. The teacher had not moved out. I mean, no one could move out of a place and forget to take his gorilla along. So the teacher had not moved out. Maybe he had just stepped out for lunch or something and forgot to lock his door or something. The teacher would soon be back. Probably. Maybe. I looked around again, still trying to figure out what the deal was here. The room I was in was not a living space. No bed, no kitchen facilities, no storage space for clothes or anything.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?